the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome back to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network. Coming to you live from a basement that just keeps getting messier. You can see over my shoulder here, more and more boxes. I just finished sending my wife out with a carload of stuff to my in-laws' house, to her parents' house, the store. We got like five more days. So that's what I'm doing, Len. What are you doing over there? How's things for you?
It's great. Just plugging away, doing my thing. Fiat mining as much as I can before I finally call it quits. You know, eventually it will be one day where I will choose no longer to do that, or somebody will tell me I'm no longer able to do that, one or the other. So yeah, man, it's just all good and enjoying as much as I can the summer, golf and tennis. And when do you take possession?
Monday we move. So Monday, I'll spoil it here. We have a guest host Monday night. Len will be doing the show with someone else because I won't have internet until Tuesday. And yeah, Monday's going to be tough. Kenzie is working Monday, and so I'm going to be holding down the fort here for the movers and probably there as well to get stuff into the house. So it'll be busy, busy, busy that day for sure, man. But that's okay. Looking forward to it. It's going to be a nice move. We're ready to get out of here.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thanks, buddy.
Big step for you. This might be your last big buy before you move to El Salvador or somewhere else. Who knows? Lots of opportunities moving forward as there's a big exodus from Canada. But yeah man, that's good to hear. And what's the overlap between having your house and the other one?
One day. The new couple comes to my place. They close on Tuesday. So we have to bridge the mortgage and do all that stuff. Honestly, like we've had so much great help from RBC and the law firm we're using, and our family's been really helpful, really great, making it easy for us. I can't imagine not having that support system. So God bless. I know it's taking a toll at this point. Like I'm pretty tired. Kenzie's pretty tired. I haven't been to the gym in like, I don't know, 4 days probably now, trying to get this stuff set up and packed and taking apart all this stuff at the house. You'd be surprised, eh? Like we've only had this house for 7 years and I have accumulated so much garbage, Len. It's almost unbelievable. I don't even know where it came from. I don't have a garage or anything. Like in this room, you can't see. There's like two closets off to the side here. And we're emptying them like 15 minutes ago. We're still doing this. And Kenzie's asking me like, do you want to keep these? I'm like, I didn't even know I own these. I have like all sorts of weightlifting peripherals that I never used and shoes I don't even remember that I own and
perfect
all manner of things. Yeah.
I'm
getting rid of a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Either sell or donate or trash.
I'm going to make my Facebook Marketplace debut with a pair of Red Wing Beckman boots that I bought like years ago that are too small. So if you want a pair of Red Wing Beckmans, Oxblood, let me know. I think they're size 8, which will fit probably a size 9 shoe, which is too small for me. I can't remember.
If you have a size 8, doesn't that fit a size 8?
Nah, boots are a little different, especially the ones that are Goodyear welted, they're called, the way that the sole attaches to the rest of the shoe. So they're always run a little big, which is why I thought I would buy them and see if I could jam into them, but I couldn't, obviously, so I never wore them. Anyway, if you want them, let me know. I'll sell them to you, $100. They're all yours.
In BTC, there you go.
Sure, in corn. Anyway, we got a lot to talk about tonight.
Including our sponsor.
Yeah, of course, EasyDNS, best out there. Mark. Mark publishing content from some kind of European beach, by the way. I don't know if you saw the Bitcoin capitalist letter the other day about Binance, BNB, and all this other stuff that he's keeping an eye on, even from sunny shores while on vacation. So we love Mark. Obviously, he's the DNS. We use him for our website, and we're going to continue to build our website there, see what else we can come up with other kind of content. I think we have a piece coming from our friend Wayfaring in the not-too-distant future. I believe he's almost done his piece on protocols, open protocols, which I'm looking forward to reading. And then, of course, if you want to move your stuff over there, Anon, many ways you can do that. Mark will help you. He'll move your email for you or help you move your email. He'll help you move your domain. He'll sell you a domain. You can host there, obviously. They have all kinds of VPS stuff, all kinds of GPG email encryption, which is fantastic. And of course, Len,
isn't it PGP?
For, It's pretty GPG privacy? For email, PGP for other stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. I had to double check that the first time we did this read. Now I still always struggle with it. But yeah, and if you want to move over there, you can go for half price if you tell them we sent you. You can't beat that. I know Boomer, the Ottawa meetup, is using their website. I believe there's a few other people who I won't mention who are also using Mark, who came from CBP ranks. So we're happy about that. Give them a look. And of course, don't forget to check out Access of Easy every Friday. That podcast comes out. We record that on Thursday nights. Lots of stuff on tech and security and privacy. Who else sponsors us, Len? Who's the other great company?
Well, Bitcoin. I have the hat there proudly on display. So if you are in Canada, only in Canada this is available. So everybody outside, you could suck it. You could buy your Bitcoin. You could sell your Bitcoin with Bull Bitcoin. But you know what? The KYC, we'll get to that in a moment. You can live off the Bitcoin standard. Not many places offer this, where you could pay your bills with your Bitcoin. You could buy gift cards with your Bitcoin and spend that in the real world. But to go back, I talked about the KYC. I glossed over it because this is the key. This is the one that really makes us happy to be with Bull, is you could go out there to any Canada Post location throughout our great nation, Canada, spend your dirty fiat, and in exchange, you're going to get some KYC-free Bitcoin. What a great deal this is. So I know this is picking up. From what I understand, there's a lot of people taking advantage of the KYC-free option that Bull has to offer because it's easy to use. The spread is very cheap. Why not use it? So we have a promo code below. If you use that, fund your account, don't game the system, you're going to have $21 added to your account. But not only could you get Bitcoin, you could also get Lightning. You could also get Liquid. So there's options if you don't want to use on-chain or transaction fees are high. So there's a lot of options with Bull. We like it. We recommend it. And exclusively, I use it for my Bitcoin purchases.
Yeah, we've been ripping. Obviously, you probably know, if you're listening to this show or paying attention to the price of Bitcoin, you may have made a trip to the post office last week on Thursday to acquire some cheap sats, which we'll get into. So first, a little housekeeping. Last week, Wednesday night, we had on Taylor Sugar from the Sugar Team Realty Group. Very good episode. Very happy Taylor came on. We're glad to have him. We'll definitely have him back. He was a wealth of knowledge, charts and numbers and all kinds of other stuff. A lot of fun, that episode. Always good to hear from a real estate guy who is a real estate bear in a world where everyone is bullish on real estate. So that was last week. Tomorrow, I didn't run this past Len. I don't even know if he realizes we're doing this tomorrow, but
fantasy football stuff.
Since the CVP is doing a fantasy football league, on Boomer's suggestion, I'm bringing on a guy named Pat Mayo from DraftKings and other fantasy football stuff. And we're going to talk about, I guess, what to do in your draft. What should you be doing in your PPR draft? I think we're playing half PPR in the CVP league. And then Wednesday, Mark Sinclair, CoinShack, coming to join us for a bit, which will be a lot of fun. Next week, guest host. Don't miss it. You don't know who it's going to be.
We could be happy about it. Announce who it is, because I
want to say who it is.
Yeah, I confirmed today that he's on board. He's going to be doing it. It's Boom.com/Boomer. So he'll be on the show in place of Joey for 1 week, because Joey obviously doesn't have internet for that day. As a result, I'm not going to do it alone. Boomer has decided to graciously accept the invitation, so we'll be doing it together, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And I hope you tune into that. And you know what, Boomer, drag all those people from the Ottawa Bitcoiner meetup to come on board too. Let's get a whole bunch of new listeners and viewers as a result of you coming on board. This will be fun.
Absolutely. So big shout out to Boomer for that support. Okay, Len, let's dive in. What do you think?
Well,
we got Boost, right?
Yeah, we got Boost. Okay. Let's the top five. So number five is Dumazim. Boost 521 sats. Two dots. That's all he said. Two dots. Buddy, if you want us to read something, I'll be happy to do it. Thanks for the boost. But you know, if you want to give us a message to read, I'll do that as well. So it's just two dots from you. Doug and Roop, 525 sats. Real estate only makes sense as somewhere to run your node from and hide your seed phrase in. I like that. So anyways, Mo BTC Dick writes in 550 sats. Living in Canada gets harder and harder to justify. And a lot of people are agreeing with that. And Doug and Roop writes in again, 1050 sats. The miner dynamics moving forward will be so interesting. MSTR definitely the lower risk option in equities, but grabbing some clean spark when the markets puke, but before prices could work pretty well. It's non-financial advice. So he's thinking that clean spark is going to be a real winner here. Of course, this is all NFA, do your own research. And the markets took a real dive in the past week as a result of what happened with Bitcoin. And the last boost we got was just some random user 486 and a whole bunch of other numbers. I, you know what, change your username, I'll be happy to read it. Boost 1111 sats would definitely love to have a collaboration between you fellas and Jack Spearco. He was my vector into Bitcoin about 3 years ago, then found you fellas shortly afterwards.
I like Jack. Yeah. I listen to Survival Podcast almost every episode if I can. I really think he's got some good insights, and he's a guy who comes from the, again, prepper has become like a derogatory term, so I won't use that, but he comes from the sort of, you know, preparedness camp, and has a lot to say about ways to insulate yourself from whatever madness is to come. I think we all agree there's some level of madness to come. I just don't know how much madness and when, but I'm pretty sure it's going to come before long. So yeah, I'll reach out to Jack. Maybe in the fall we can set something up. I'd love to talk to him. He's a great dude. I like that show quite a bit. You listen to that one, Len, the Survival Podcast?
I don't know. I know we're booking in October right now. We're so, you know, it's pretty far in the future. So yeah, we could bring them on and go from there. But you know, a couple of things I just want to rhyme off quickly. Number one, you also, if besides giving us a boost, leave a review on Apple and Spotify. That helps us with growing our audience. And lastly, remember, this is all tongue in cheek. So don't come after us, which is not financial advice. Do your own research. And this is just satirical stuff. So anything else you want to go at before we...
How about the usual like and subscribe that someone always writes in the chat at like 7:30 or 7:40. I'll say it right now off the top. Like the video, subscribe to the channel, and let's get into it, buddy. I'm ready.
Okay, well, with Bitcoin, let's talk about the Bitcoin price. And typically, we don't talk a lot about Bitcoin price as a news item, but this was the big news story for this past week because there was a sudden drop in the price of Bitcoin. And I really hate talking about the price in depth, but well, this is dominating the news cycle, so we got to give it its just due and give it a few minutes of discussion. And for a long time, it was sitting around the 29,000 stablecoin market, the 29,000-ish. Hopefully you didn't lose me there. I saw my Wi-Fi kind of give a... Okay, you're perfect. So yeah, it was a 29. It did go up as high as 33,000, but 29,000 was the number. But it stayed there for a very, very long time. But last Thursday, the price dropped suddenly to around $26,000, a little bit under from what I recall. And this happened very quickly. It was about an 8% drop in about a 10-minute period of time. This is Bitcoin. We've seen this before. We'll see it again. During this whole saga here, from what I was reading, there's been a lot of liquidations, a lot of long positions that were just liquidated as a result. There's still a lot of degens out there that are trying to trade their way into prosperity, and it doesn't work, man. Again, this is, again, not financial advice, but buy and hold. That's the best way to do things. And these degens will just continually do things until their funds run dry. And the question is, what triggered all this? And it's hard to dictate one thing and point your finger to say this is it, because it's a number of different reasons. There was a story from the Wall Street Journal that SpaceX reportedly sold off a whole bunch of Bitcoin. Number was being thrown around at $373 million in their Bitcoin holdings. So this is all, you know, interesting stuff. And fanning the flames was Bitcoin Magazine. They were reporting that SpaceX doesn't have any Bitcoin left on their balance sheet. Basically, they sold off their entire stack. But the Wall Street Journal article also mentions that, you know, they managed to sell some, but not all. So, I mean, there's still some confusion here exactly how much SpaceX did sell. And the Wall Street, you know, Journal mentioned that SpaceX marked down their value of their Bitcoin. So there could be some creative accounting here. I do not know. We have to do some chain analysis to figure out what's going on. But another thing that could also be attributed to this, some people are saying, is the Chinese property giant Evergrande, filed for Chapter 11 in New York. I doubt this has any bearing whatsoever with the price of Bitcoin, but some people are speculating that this has a minor part to this. But whatever. One thing is for certain, really the market is shaky. And it's not just the Bitcoin market, it's the overall market as a whole. If it just takes one article about SpaceX to drop things 8% in 10 minutes, some lousy writing about some lousy company out there, well, we're in some very volatile times. You thought we got rid of it and it's going to be some stability moving forward. Heck no, it's going to be still volatile moving forward. And there are, I assume, a lot of Bitcoin newcomers that came into this lately, although I speculate how many, because the economy being so difficult right now and the price of Bitcoin being just flat, there may not be an opportunity for people to part with extra money. And Bitcoin may not seem sexy enough, given that the price has been flat. But nonetheless, with a lot of these newcomers that are coming in, be ready for all these moves, the price action of Bitcoin going up and down as well. And again, not financial advice, doing your research, but for me, I didn't blink when I saw this move, this price action. Unless the price of Bitcoin goes below $10,000, I'm going to be in buying mode. And even if it goes below $10,000, I'll still be in buying mode, but I'll just be looking at it a little more closely. But at that point, I'll probably be selling a kidney to try to take advantage of the cheap price. But another thing, you know, you have to understand too, and this is a side point, we're so far away from an all-time high. What is the all-time high? 69,000-ish, whatever that number is. But remember, that number is 2021 dollars. So if you want to take into consideration 2023 dollars, I think that to be an actual real all-time high to compare to the purchasing power, it might have to be 80,000 or beyond. So anything up until then is not really an all-time high. So keep that in consideration. We're so far away from an all-time high, and there's so much room to run up. But the Bitcoin market remains very finicky. The broader market is tied to the price of Bitcoin in some way, shape, or form. People are scared off there. The finances are taking a pounding. People's discretionary spending is going down. And so much negative feedback that there's a loop here that's going to be impacting Bitcoin. But remember, Bitcoin, one Bitcoin will always remain one Bitcoin. And I'll just end it really quick here because I want to talk about this on a separate note. Binance, this is something else that may be impacting the price of Bitcoin, but I think we should talk about that separately, unless you want to do a deep dive into this one. What are your thoughts on this, Joey?
Well, I think Binance has something to do with this. Maybe we should get into it now, but I just want to add on the Elon thing. Like, I don't understand why people care about this. To me, one thing I wish I had checked, and I'm kind of thinking of it now, what did the price go up when Tesla announced that they had added Bitcoin to their balance sheet and were going to take Bitcoin for their cars? It was like almost 32,000 to about 40,000 that morning. So what's that?
Yeah, that number seems right. It was
20%. So it was about 20%. And so on the SpaceX sell, we lost about 9%, I think, and settled down somewhere around 7 or 8. Maybe as low as 10. I think we did get into the 25XXX area there for a minute or two. But I'm surprised people care about this. And maybe it's because people are attached to Elon. There's a cult of personality there. Or maybe because they just read headlines and don't care much about the underlying tech or the sound money aspects. Maybe we're still doing that sort of recruiting in new Bitcoiners. I'm not sure. But I was surprised to see that drop so precipitously. Because it doesn't make any sense. The Evergrande thing, I think, is 2 years in the making, right? It was 2021 when that whole thing started to go belly up. And now I guess it's official. But I don't think that that's a Bitcoin story until it's a stock market story, right? Until the contagion hits the S&P, it's not really a Bitcoin story. I don't think there's much correlation there. And I'm not saying it, you know, will or won't, but I think that's really the catalyst when the S&P moves on stories like that. The Binance thing, I think, is interesting. And Mark had this in his letter, and there's a few other places you can get this if you don't subscribe to Mark's letter. There's an account on Twitter that's making the claim that the Binance Bitcoin wallet has about 1.4, 1.3 billion in BTC that it's selling to try and defend the BNB peg. And that's a lot of downward pressure. I tweeted with someone today, Sir Pleb or something like that, Sir Plebius, just kind of quick back and forth on Twitter. I am saving some cash for a Binance collapse, and Boomer's in the chat talking about how he's going to get to break down the Binance collapse next week. I'll be jealous if you do, because I would love to do that story. But I think that this is getting pretty close. Len, famously CZ tweeting out 212 is the number we'll buy all your BNB from you at. Like these guys, does he not remember what happened with FTX? Like he was the guy who initiated that cascade, right? He was the guy who was going to bail them out and decided not to. He's the guy who started all that. And so now he seems to be running the same playbook. Last I checked, this was like in the afternoon, it was 208, 207 or 208. So he's lost that peg by enough that it's concerning if that's where he's trying to defend. And that's a lot of Bitcoin to sell. The pressure on the market when you got a guy who's willing to like liquidate Bitcoin. And by the way, Len, maybe not just like BNB or not just Binance Bitcoin, but maybe like your Bitcoin Binance user if you can't get it out. And the stories today as well, not only about Bitcoin withdrawals being an issue, but also if you deposited euros into Binance, you also can't get them out. And they're allegedly deleting support tweets or deleting replies under their support team's tweets because they are basically saying like, hey, man, what the fuck is going on here? I can't get my euros out. And so all this stuff together tells me that they're on very shaky ground. Now, maybe the bigger question here, BNB, Binance, if they go down, we're going to see sub 20K Bitcoin, I think. The real question, Len, is does this have an effect on Tether or no? My suggestion would be no, although it seems people online are drawing some lines between these two things. I don't think that Binance is that big a deal when it comes to Tether. Tether is a separate entity. Binance actually has its own stablecoin, right? BUSD, I think.
They're so, unwinding that as we speak. So
are they? Okay.
Yeah, they haven't been issuing any new tokens, I think, since March. So that's slowly winding down to zero.
Goes to show what I know about the stablecoin ecosystem. But I mean, how concerned are you about this? Like you and I talk about Binance for one reason or another. I don't know, probably every week, honestly, every week or every 2 weeks. And this to me seems like a significant kind of wobble in the stability over there for the first time.
I've been talking about Binance potentially being the next one for a very long time. If you go to my Nostr feed, you'll see that for a long time, I was just lambasting Binance and BUSD and the BNB token, just because I don't think that they're standing on sound footing. I think that they're ready to be, it's ripe for the picking. They've been shut out of some major markets, specifically the United States. And with all that capital not coming in, it's going to impact their bottom line. And so as you touched upon, where they said they were suspending withdrawals and deposits in Europe, that's another relatively big market. The you know, you're talking about 300 million people, and the euro is a fairly stable-ish currency. Yeah. it's got some value to it. So taking that out of the equation, and with Binance no longer able to have those users take advantage of their product, where are they making the majority of their profits from?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Not from China.
The flywheel, man. We talked about this before. Any of these guys with the token, right? That's how they bolster their balance sheet. And it looks like that's what they're doing here.
And this is another point I just want to bring up. And it highlights, don't leave anything on an exchange, specifically your Bitcoin. Because if you do, we've had so much history as to why you shouldn't, but you don't want to have Binance, you don't want to give them the ability to sell it. And eventually, like if something happens and you no longer have access to your Bitcoin, take advantage while you can, if you can, at least depending which part of the world you live in, put that into cold storage and leave it be. Don't leave it on an exchange, because there is a lot of risk by doing so. And the value of Bitcoin, although it took a little bit of a pounding this past week, long term, we all have our own vision of what it should be. What's the value of one Bitcoin? And it's much higher than what it is today. So why subject it to an exchange and potentially get it rug pulled? It doesn't make any sense to me. So I just wanted to add that. I want to double back quickly. You're talking about how much Bitcoin that Binance has, and they're potentially selling that to keep the prop up, the BNB token. I just checked a few minutes ago. BNB is around $211. So it's, you know, it went below the threshold. A lot of people were saying 212. Armageddon didn't happen yet. Maybe they are selling Bitcoin, and that's causing a lot of downward pressure, as you mentioned, to the price of Bitcoin. But another thing is the sentiment up there, it doesn't take much. Overall, people are worried about so many different things, about the greater economy as a whole, and Bitcoin is no exception. And when you throw in one piece of negative news out there, and just throw it in there, then people are going to take that and just start selling and selling and selling. And unfortunately, there's still a lot of paper hands out there. I think the majority of Bitcoiners understand what is the real value of Bitcoin, but it's the people that are actually trading it, they're making the value of it what it is today in the open market, which is too bad, because eventually these guys will run out of capital. But until then, they're going to be dictating the price. And unfortunately, 8 to 10% drop was a result of all this.
So I just want to share from Mark's letter here. There's an account called Wolf Trades claiming that the reason BNB can't go below 212 is because they have a BNB-backed loan with liquidation point of 212, which was reduced from 220 after they included margin trading in June.
They went to 207 today, by the way.
I don't know. Does it matter? Maybe it's the close. Who knows how these loans are structured, right? I'm not sure. Or they could put up a little more capital, a little more collateral. I don't know. I'm really not sure. But so there's only a few tweets here. It says, Binance's CEO is focused on preserving the exchange. He's selling BTC from the wallet address, and I'm going to put it in the chat here for people. They can have a look and tell me what you think. For TUSD, then he's using the proceeds to buy BNB. This strategy is aimed at preventing a serious margin call situation that would threaten the stability of the BNB chain. On another front, regulators in the U.S. are taking actions to sell off holdings controlled by U.S. marshals. This is being done to put pressure on Binance Coin loans, which could ultimately force CZ out of the industry. It's a strategic move resembling a game of cat and mouse. So this guy's saying that the U.S. government is selling some of its crypto as well to put pressure on the BNB loan situation. That's nuts if that's true. The thing is, we don't know all the addresses, right? This account, I don't know anything about this account. If Mark, you know, is paying attention to it, then it's probably worth paying attention to. And that address is either legit or not. But, you know, it's in any case, you could see that the Bitcoin's coming out of there. So between that address and allegedly the U.S. government working against CZ, like, you love to see it. Talk about a movie ending here for this guy. Like, what's he got? This is like CZ's last stand.
It was inevitable. Once the U.S. decided to say fuck you to Binance, what other options did they have? They were shut off from China, shut off from the United States, Canada as well, but they're a minnow in the grand scheme of things. Where are they going to get the majority of their profits from? I mean, you look at it, they were being every jurisdiction didn't want them operating in it. And eventually, you know, you could operate on people using VPNs and stuff, but they're going to be the exception rather than the norm. They're not going to bring in large amounts of dollars, huge trading volumes and stuff like that. They don't have the capacity to do that. So, you know, what is the United States population? 400 million people, give or take. I don't know how many people over there would be considered to be playing the shitcoin casino, but they're the ones that have the most capital that they could throw at something.
No doubt. There's no doubt.
Take that away. Like, that's a huge blow. How could Binance sustain itself? And then you have BUSD unwinding and has been unwinding since November. It was a $21 billion market cap November of last year. Now it's just slightly over $3.2 billion earlier today. That's a huge drawdown. And they still claim it's back to one-to-one. What happens if it's not? And we get to like $2 billion market cap, $1 billion market cap, $500 million market cap. What are they going to use to support claims that they're back one-to-one? If they sell something else?
Yeah.
Bitcoin, your Bitcoin.
That's what I mean.
BNB.
Yeah.
And a bunch of other shit they probably
just no, have. There's no reason, like, again, to just put another, you know, put a bow on your point earlier. You buy Bitcoin because it's a bearer asset. You're taking away the risk of the counterparty. You know, why would you add all that risk back? Especially with an offshore exchange, like, it's beyond me. But if you're doing it, like, stop, Michael Jordan meme, right? Stop, get some help. you got to get that stuff off an exchange, put it somewhere where you can control the keys. That's all I'll say.
100%. But anyways, let's move on. We could talk about another spot Bitcoin ETF being approved. No, it's not in the United States. This time it's in the Netherlands, and it's the Jacobi Assets Management. Jacobi FT Wilshire Bitcoin ETF. That's a word salad right there. It went live on August 15th, and it didn't just happen overnight. Apparently, this was a year in the making before this ultimately went live. So it did take them some time to get the approvals and get all the I's dotted and T's crossed. But it's not as bad as the SEC, who seems to have an indefinite timeline when it comes to approving these spot Bitcoin applications, ETF applications. But going back to the Netherlands application or the Netherlands Bitcoin ETF, it's traded under the ticker Bcoin. That's pretty interesting. I have a pretty cool ticker name. I like it. And very interestingly enough here, the person or the people that are handling the custodian elements of the Bcoin ETF, Fidelity Coinbase. Digital Assets.
Oh, Fidelity. Okay.
Fidelity. Yeah. So they've gotten their hands on a lot of this. And it's another one. So this, again, I go back. This is all paper Bitcoin. You expect them to be backed one-to-one. I totally expect them because these should be open and transparent with the ETFs and their holdings, how much they have and so forth. But in the end, it's still an IOU. If something worse comes to worse, they'll give you something else that is not what it is that they own. You never know. It's when you're dealing with an IOU. But I find it interesting that you're having a lot of these spot Bitcoin ETFs that are being approved all over the globe, and still the SEC is, I don't want to say dragging their feet, but they're not doing this. But it is still paper Bitcoin, And another thing I don't know, maybe somebody could point this out to me if this is the truth or not. Can other Europeans take advantage of the spot Bitcoin ETF in the Netherlands? Could somebody in Spain, in France, Italy, wherever, could they take advantage of it because simply they're in the EU? Or is this only for people living in the Netherlands? I'd love to know. I couldn't find the answer to this.
Why? Like, again, we buy the ETFs here because there's tax efficiency options. Does Netherlands have the same rationale?
Good question. I don't know the tax structure. I don't either.
But like, I can't imagine why you would buy that ETF unless you had that tax efficiency issue. Any ETF really is related to Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever other garbage you want to dabble in. Like, I just don't get it. I don't understand the rationale. It's, I know, easier for some investors. Maybe it's like a top of the funnel thing, like we like to say. But you know, there's so many options now to buy Bitcoin and custody it from basically your phone. Like, you don't really need much else. You don't need like a hardware wallet right away. You don't need, I don't know. You don't need like anything super fancy. You can use Sparrow on your desktop and off you go. If you get less than $1,000 worth of Bitcoin or less than $10,000 worth of Bitcoin, like, it's not that hard. I don't understand Len as well. Fidelity doing the custody. I know there was a letter issued by some front for the SEC and Liz Warren. I can't remember what the name of the company is. I heard this on the brink, but basically attacking Fidelity, saying that the ETF shouldn't be approved, that they filed, blah blah blah. Like, how much longer can the U.S. hold out? It's a global community these days, and everybody who wants a Bitcoin ETF is looking for stories about the ETFs and seeing. We have, you know, a handful of them. Netherlands has them. Australia has them. The UK and other European countries have them. Well, what are they doing over there? How can they continue to make this case that the market isn't, you know, quote unquote, visible enough to run a spot ETF? I don't understand this. I continue to be amazed. And I think that, you know, honestly, this week, the first Republican debate, I believe, is on Wednesday night, tomorrow night or Wednesday night. I forget when, but I guarantee
who's that, invited.
All I know is Vivek is there, Chris Christie is there. Who are the other big ones? That's not a shot at Chris Christie. I'll pull it up. But the thing I was going to say is that it's going to be mentioned in one of these debates, right? This is the first one, but as time goes on, if there's an inflationary event, or if there's a market crash, or if there's whatever, right? Like, you're going to see a Bitcoin question, and then what do you do? What, you're just going to pretend that you know, don't know anything about it? You're going to have to give an answer. And I would guess the answer is going to be, we want to allow an ETF. Here's a list of candidates that can participate. Trump obviously is not. Trump is going to be doing Tucker in lieu of the debate, actually. Ron DeSantis, Tim Scott.
With Tucker?
Yeah. Ron DeSantis, Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Kristi Burgum, no idea who that is, Pence, and someone named Asa Hutchinson. I don't know who that is. But I would love, so the debate's Wednesday. Why don't Trump and Tucker do a live commentary of the debate? Like, that's what they should do. That would be like smash it.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
But anyway, so like the ETFs, they're constantly being talked about. They're being bandied about. Kathy Wood is on MSNBC once every week or 2 weeks talking Bitcoin. Other people are talking Bitcoin on MSNBC or CNBC, I should say. Everyone is thinking about this stuff in the investing space. And I think in the broader economy, people know about it now in a way they didn't 4 years ago. And so those questions are going to come up, and those politicians are a lot better off saying, yes, I support it, than no, I don't. There's not a lot of people who are like anti-Bitcoin ETF, but there are a lot of people who are pro-Bitcoin ETF, right? They want one or don't care if there's one. And so I would expect to see those questions start to be raised pretty soon. Maybe not Wednesday, but soon, very soon.
You don't say there's a lot of people against a spot Bitcoin ETF?
I don't think so. Like, say this, like voters, you think?
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at the word army, and we have the anti-crypto army from Elizabeth Warren. And to me, if I'm just looking at the surface, that is a lot of people behind it. Now, are they, you know, legitimate? Are they made up? I have no clue. But, I think a lot of people are just, for the most part, just don't care. The greater population.
Well, so why not just say, I support it, sure. Because you're not going to win or lose those people with supporting it, but you will lose people who want it if you say, nah, I'm out on the ETF. I want that question to come up. I don't think like any I was disappointed that so far I haven't heard the All In guys, when they've had candidates on, ask about it. I didn't hear Patrick Bet-David ask about it. I haven't heard Rogan really ask about Bitcoin at all. And I don't expect that the network's going to ask about it unless there's a catalyst for that discussion, like a significant move in the Dixie or a significant like inflationary issue or whatever. I mean, Krugman maybe is going to be the catalyst, right? Today he's out there talking we should retarget to 3% inflation from 2%. So is that enough to get people talking about currency weakness? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. The other problem that Bitcoin has, as far as like a shoehorn into a debate, is currency weakness is not a debate stage question. You'll lose people. People fall asleep. Ultimately, those things are for ratings more than they're for sharing information as far as the networks are concerned. So maybe they don't want to go that direction. I don't know. We got to get the candidates on here. Next time there's like an election in Ontario, we should demand that all candidates come on this platform and talk to us about their Bitcoin and ETF related positions.
Oh. Why not bring Vivek and we'll play some tennis against him? I'm not sure if you saw the video of him. He said he was.
I haven't.
He's now somebody was giving him like they were giving him softballs, but he was hitting with a lot of topspin. And notably, he's playing on clay courts, so Hartrud, to be specific. So he's a clay court guy. So he's a dirt baller. So yeah, there you go. It's good for the body. It's good for people that are good with spins and all that. And play Rosedale even. That's an option.
People watching this video are looking at me like, this is way over Joey's head. He doesn't know what the fuck Len is talking about. Topspin, dirt ballers, and all this other stuff.
We'll move on. Let's talk about PayPal then. Let's talk about them, that they've partnered up with Ledger of all people. And yeah, this is a mentioning these two is a marriage that is just made for success and yeah, potentially a rug pull as well. So PayPal is now going to allow their users to buy what they call crypto, and it could be stored on the Ledger Live app automatically, and this will be done through the PayPal account. So yeah, here you go. Let's look at the shittiness of, well, that is this thing. So PayPal, they have a checkered past on their own of fucking over users, of preventing people from getting access to their funds. All right, so there you go. So PayPal is not a good player here. We can look at Ledger. User data has been stolen. Okay, that's not very good either. They also want you to pay $10 a month so they could store your keys and have it private given to you in case you lose it. Yeah, that's another good thing there. PayPal is KYC too. Now that's another. All your buys are going to be KYC'd. So this is really going to automatically fuck users in all ways, shapes, and form. So you're good to go. And if this is the way you want to buy Bitcoin, all the more power to you. But really, if anybody doing this is sacrificing the ease of use, ease of buying, ease of storing it in lieu of privacy. And in my honest opinion, this is just opening another backdoor to users to potentially get rug pulled. And for new users out there that think, you know, this might be a good opportunity to buy Bitcoin, it's easy to use and simple, easy, and convenient way of doing things, don't fall for the trap of these easy buys and overly simplified storages, because it doesn't make sense. Learn the right way to do it. Like Bitcoin, you could properly store it, KYC free. Those are options if you go look around Bull Bitcoin. Go through the motions to securely store it. So spin up a new cold card wallet. Recommend that your XPub, keep that hidden away. Don't expose that. Expose that only to your own node. Of course, run your own node. Broadcast your own transactions. Don't take shortcuts, because when you start taking shortcuts, it's not only going to lead to like lengthy delays, but you're going to be exposing yourself in a way that you don't want to be exposed. This is your wealth. So don't fuck around with it. But fuck PayPal and fuck Ledger. I don't like this one bit.
KYC is no longer excusable, I don't think, in Canada, for Canadians anyways. Too many options as far as being able to buy KYC free, whether it's, you know, our sponsor Bitcoin Well, or Bitcoin, Bull Bitcoin, I should say, or friends of the show Bitcoin Well, or Bisc, or RoboSats, or any of these other companies that will sell you Bitcoin without KYCing yourself. There's not really a good excuse to use a service like PayPal, which, as we've talked about many times, has a history of crazy things, man. Censoring people for posting misinformation, quote unquote misinformation online. You know, the Venmo live stream of payments being sent. Having people make people change the notes in their PayPal and Venmo payments because they view it as unsavory or potentially illegal or whatever. Insane. And so why would you do that? On top of that, other kind of underrated thing I'll just mention again, because I'm guilty of this more than some and less than others. You want to know how to use wallet software and hardware before you need to know how to use wallet hardware and software. Because if you don't know, by the time you need to know, it's going to be too late. You're going to be panicked. You might be in a crunch. You might, you know, need to leave the country. You might need to send your money, your Bitcoin to somebody to help them out. You never know. And when you need that freedom, you need to know how to exercise those muscles. And it can't be the first time you're doing that stuff. And so, yeah, stay away from these companies, man. There's just no need. And also, you know, we should make, these companies should pay a price, Len, for that kind of offering, right? Like, to team up with Ledger after what they've done, there should be a price to pay for that. The problem is that the normie who's going to buy Bitcoin on PayPal doesn't know the story, right? It's targeting sort of the lowest common denominator in the Bitcoin space. And it's not good for those people, but they're not going to pay a price, unfortunately, until it's too late. Like I just said, it really it's disappointing. It's disappointing. Now, what can we do to support those people? Like, I'm not even sure. Because they're obviously, you know, if you're using PayPal, you're not listening to this show. You're not listening to like Marty and Matt or Stefan Levera or, you know, NDK or whoever, right? Like you're floating. You're new. You're lazy, you know, in the worst case. Yeah. How do you help them?
I don't know if you can. The only thing I can do, and I'll continually trying to do it, is to tell them what is the right path and to try to take it. Because then at the end of the day, I can look in the mirror and see the guy that's staring back at me and say he did the best job he could. Is you could lead the horse to water, but you can't force him to drink. And it's too bad. Really, what is needed with a lot of this is people need to get burned. They need to know somebody that's close to them, a family member, a friend, or whatever, just who have gotten burned through the process. And through that, they will probably change, hopefully, change their habits and use something that is more secure and more private. Now, Rand Moore, just, I don't know if this is true or not. This could be blasphemy. He's saying he heard NVK uses a seed signer. Is that true or not? That's funny. So that's pretty funny if that is true. Anyways, I'm done with this topic. I'm not sure if you want to add anything.
No, we're good. We're good. Let's move on.
Okay. So let's talk about Liquid. And we don't talk about them all in depth too much, but there's some interesting news that came out this past week. Something called their functionary source code is now free and it's been open sourced. And this was an announcement made by Blockstream last week on Tuesday. And at that time, they decided to make the move to make Liquid's functionary source code free and open source and available to the public. And I'll explain what it is, the functionary source code. So now what it is anybody is able to audit the code which runs these functionaries and allow people to create their own Liquid-like network with confidential transactions and asset issuance. So with this move, people can now review how to unsign Liquid blocks that are produced. Mm-hmm. Liquid blocks are distributed and signed. Dynamic transactions, which update the set of functionaries who operate the network, and network parameters are added to the block headers to update consensus rules. UTXOs are swept back to the Federation address where they're close to expiring, and peg out are analyzed and delivered. So really all this does is give more transparency to the end users. And if you really want to know a little bit more about what is the Liquid functionary, this is a subset of the Liquid Federation. Currently 15 members are in that. Mm-hmm. They operate the Liquid functionaries, and they are specialized servers that sit in the center of the overall network. And they perform two roles. They take turns proposing and signing new blocks of the Liquid sidechain and managing the two-way Bitcoin peg, secure the Bitcoin that's held in a network in a federated multi-sig wallet. That's an 11 of 15 multi-sig wallets. So of those 15 people, they all have a part of the multi-sig thing over there. So this I find to be really cool. I did not know this part was not open source before. To be perfectly honest, I didn't know a heck of a lot about Liquid aside for the fact it's a sidechain, it's a little bit quicker, and there's potentially privacy involved with it. But I do like that they're open sourcing this. It gives people an opportunity to look what is in the code. And if they even want to, they could copy it and make their own moving forward. So I give Liquid a lot of credit for doing this. Is it going to make it that it's going to be something feasible? People are going to probably be using it moving forward? Probably not. Liquid is a very unique set of circumstances or set of parameters it has and functionalities. I think that the best way to use it is if there is a high congestion. The network fees are rather high with on-chain. Liquid could probably function well in terms of dealing with that, offsetting that. And when the network fees then get lowered, then you could start moving from Liquid to on-chain. But in the end, Liquid is, at least for the time being, it's more of an anomaly. It's something that you're looking at. It's not going to be a game changer. It's just something there. Some people even say it's a shitcoin. I'm not going to go as far to say that yet. I want to learn a little bit more about it, but I do like that they're open sourcing the functionary source code.
I don't have that view that it's a shitcoin. I think it's a, you know, kind of a neat project that had some, you know, it was meant to help in high fee environments, right? I believe that was the original use case, but then Lightning popped up and there's other alternatives now that you can use instead. I don't, you know, I don't have much to add on this. I'll just say it's good that they're open sourcing it, because sometimes that can inspire somebody, right? If they're reading the code or looking over the code and they say, oh, you know, I could maybe improve this and we could iterate on this and build something that might be a little more useful to the broader community. Great. Love to see that. They certainly didn't have to do that, but the fact that they're doing it is good. Blockstream, should note, also produces the Jade wallet, which is open source, reproducible. And I believe they also, do they have a Node software? I don't remember if they do or not.
I don't know if they do.
I can't remember a Node implementation, but anyway, it's good to see from them. And it's, you know, it's average behavior from Blockstream, but it should be expected behavior from everybody. And you obviously are a huge proponent of FOSS on this show and on Access of Easy. You talk about it a lot. Those are the things you can trust. And even in some cases, you know, Libitcoin, obviously we talked about last week or the week before, that code needs to be reviewed, right? And if you don't review it, you're going to wind up in a situation like these, you know, stupid DeFi protocols keep finding themselves in, all closed source, getting nicked every week, it seems like, for 80 million, 70 million, 150 million, whatever the case is. Don't fuck around with stuff that's not auditable, reviewable, visible, and transparent to the community, because either they don't want it to be transparent because someone could do it better, in which case you don't want that product, or it's not transparent because they didn't do well, in which case you don't want that product. So in either case, like, stay away. That's really all there's to it.
Let's talk about more Blockstream stuff. And an anniversary was hit this past week. And on August 16th, it marked the sixth year that Blockstream have launched the Blockstream satellite project. And that is something which broadcasts the Bitcoin time chain 24/7 for free. And the satellite project gives the Bitcoin network some protection against interruptions and providing areas without reliable internet connections with the opportunity to use Bitcoin. And this was one of my biggest concerns, chiefly with Bitcoin, is that should there be some widespread outages causing multiple versions of the Bitcoin network to propagate, that would obviously be problematic. But this, having a satellite system, should eliminate or at least reduce this type of problem, which is something we want. We want redundancy built in this network. For those wanting this system, it's not cheap. $499, this is all US dollars, for the base system, and $899 for the Pro Kit. The Pro Kit is more robust because it gives you dual satellite capabilities for more reliable data. And the system is generally used for receive only. So if you're thinking about using this for broadcasting your own transactions, you need to use Blockstream's website, and you have to jump through some hoops in order to make this happen. So it may not be the best scenario for privacy in terms of broadcasting, receiving the information and keeping your node up to date. Well, that works just fine with privacy. And I'm not trying to shill this product. For people who want to use it, great. People who don't, even better. This is expensive and is generally for, you know, for receive only purposes, and offers benefits to very specific users in remote locations that have limited internet access. But Bitcoiners as a whole, we need more projects like this. I've seen some interesting ways of broadcasting transactions. Some have even used the moon, where they broadcast it to the moon and come back. Somebody received it. So there's a lot of interesting ways.
Everybody knows the moon's not real, buddy. Come on.
How the heck did they do this then? I don't know. And the fact that they're able to do this, I like to see how creative Bitcoiners are. But projects like this, and especially when you have satellites in orbit that are transmitting the Bitcoin network to people down here on Earth, I like these type of projects. Albeit this might be expensive, but we need more of these. We need more redundancy. We need more out of the box thinking, because you never know what's going to be coming up and down in the future. Because if there is some widespread internet outage and you don't have access to internet and there's no way to keep your node up to date to broadcast a transaction, your Bitcoin is essentially useless at that point. But then again, so is Visa, American Express, your plastic, whatever you have in your wallet. So there's a lot of, you know, this goes to show you by doing stuff like this, it makes it easier to use and it's more redundant. We want this more robust.
Yeah, man. And we just talked about this. Like when you need Bitcoin, you can't be doing stuff for the first time. You can't be, you know, concerned that you don't know how to broadcast a transaction. These little projects, like you just said, start off as kind of niche, fun things to post about. And there's videos and people on podcasts talk about them, blah, blah, blah. But when push comes to shove, you know, for this group of people who still thinks the government can ban Bitcoin or shut down the network or whatever, like good luck. Okay. These things are just floating out there and they're helping propagate the network and making sure that the blocks are coming in, all that stuff. And this is an important piece of the pie, man. If you think that we're headed for some kind of calamity, like some people do in Bitcoin and in, you know, society more broadly, you want this redundancy. It's important. Have you ever seen those stories about the guys who are sending transactions on ham radio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah. So it gives you so many options that you don't have to have internet access. All you have to have is a way to receive the signal. And ham radio doesn't have a very, very large radius in terms of sending it out. But still, you can send your transactions out. That is so fucking cool.
Yeah, so, it's awesome.
Man. Yeah. So move on, and we'll talk about one last story. I want to just mention there was a lucky Bitcoin miner that won the lottery.
This is incredible. I can't believe this. With the hash rate where it is?
Yeah, this happens periodically. You get this news story. I think it's been about a year since we had something along this line. So, I mean, it's inevitable. You have a lot of people out there doing solo mining, and they're rolling the dice every 10 minutes on average. So it just may come up. So this, for all you solo mining enthusiasts out there, this story is going to give you a little bit of some hope, because there was reports that a solo miner with only one petahash of mining power, hash rate power out there, they won the block reward this past Friday. And for those unaware, one petahash is about 10 S19J Pros, the 100 terahash model, or about 66 S9s. So that gives you an idea how much equipment he had out there. Probably wasn't 66 S9s, probably a variety of some S19s out there. Anyways, a lot of power he was using too to get to one petahash. And the miner was using the Solo Pool CK pool, and it's an anonymous pool out there with 2% mining fee. So if you want to do anonymous mining out there, you can potentially use this, and it's you're good to go. Just don't expect to win very much at all. They're saying, in fact, with this one petahash of power that this guy had of hash rate, they were estimating it would take around 7 years of continuous mining to win the lottery, given the current hash rate. But we all know that hash rate isn't static. It continually goes up regardless of the price of Bitcoin. Hash rate just goes up. More and more equipment is being thrown on the network. And so I don't want to encourage anybody from out there to start doing solo mining. It's a money or even mining in general. It's a money losing game. But I suspect many out there are heating their homes with S9s. And if you're going to be using electricity to heat your home, your workspace, whatever, you might as well slap an S9 and start doing it that way. So, and if you want to do that and do the solo mining, this guy might give you some inspiration to do it. But keep in mind that the amount of hash rate he has equates to 66 S9s running a full throttle. And for those who really want to know, the block reward in which he won was 6.25 Bitcoin. But this only applies until the next halving, which is scheduled to take place in April of 2024, at which place that number 6.25 is going to be cut in half. So if you really want to do solo Bitcoin mining, you have a little bit of time left to get the 6.25 reward. If not, you're going to get 3 and change. So yeah, check it out.
I have nothing to add to that story except congratulations and I hate you, guy who won that block.
That's retirement. You know, if you get that, I'm done. Thank you, boss, but I'm going to just quit. Anyways, let's move on to Clown World. And there's, I really don't want to talk about all that much. I'll be brief. I mean, I know you may want to talk about Jackson Hole. So do you want to just...
I put it in the notes, but like, I think people are expecting Jackson Hole to be the same as it was last year where Powell came out, you know, like a 1950s pastor preaching fire and brimstone. I don't expect him to do that this time around because things are so wobbly. I expect him to be pretty tame and maybe, you know, even unbutton his shirt a little bit and not wear a tie. I'm expecting that. The only Clown World thing I want to talk about, I don't know if you have it in here, is in communist Toronto, Olivia Chow and her cronies there want to implement a new municipal retail tax on people to help shore up the balance sheet of the city. Get the fuck out of here. Are you kidding me with that?
Yeah, so that's in Clown World North. We just dive right into that. So yeah, there's a shortfall out there. And apparently they're looking at about $45 billion. That's the hole that they have over the next decade. So Toronto is anticipating this is the amount of money, the shortfall they're going to have. And somehow they're going to have to make this, fill this hole, because they can't continually go to the province with their hands up, because the province themselves don't have very much money. And the Fed is backstopping all this. They have nothing themselves. So it's just this vicious cycle of nobody having enough money. So one of the ideas they have out there, as Joey mentioned, is they're going to be introducing, the idea is they may want to introduce a Toronto sales tax, so municipal sales tax in the city of Toronto. And it's not like if the municipal government, the Toronto government decides to go ahead with it, it's going to be green lighted. They still have to go to the province to get approval. Mm-hmm. So it's not a guarantee, given especially who's in power in the province. They may not decide to go ahead with it. And it's estimated that it's going to generate around $800 million a year. That's how much it's going to be generated by a new municipal sales tax. But the one thing I have to just ask people out there, you know, you're adding an extra tax on already existing taxes, and people are stretched thin as it is. Food bank usage has gone up. People are struggling with rent. This is going to impact them even more, and it's going to push them potentially over the edge if they haven't already been pushed. And another thing I want to just throw out there is anybody living on the periphery is going to consider just going outside to the next jurisdiction to shop. You know, if you're living in the West End of Mississauga or East End towards Pickering, wherever the heck it is, I don't even know. It's just like if you're living in Windsor or Niagara Falls, a lot of people go across the border to shop because it is cheaper to do so. Why wouldn't Toronto residents do the same if you're living near the borders? So and some people are saying this is all a result of Toronto, their housing tax, the house tax. What is that called?
They have like a builder's levy there. They also have a second property tax, right? I believe
the property tax. No, but as a homeowner, you pay a tax. So I forget what it's called. It's escaping me.
Yeah, that's what I mean by the. Yeah, I mean we're talking about the same thing. I don't know what it's called. Let's see. I'll look it up here. Second,
it's like every year MPAC comes around and assesses the value of the home, and we're paying a property tax. That's it. The property taxes that are paid in Toronto is generally believed to be much lower than it is in surrounding areas or rest of the country. So it's people are saying that maybe it may be high time to increase the property value, property tax, to be in accordance and in line with their neighbors, and this way they could make the ends meet their budgetary requirements. But one thing is to consider is they have the TTC, and that's a huge draw on their budget. And I know there was talks about uploading that to the province some time ago, and I don't think it's been done. So they're dealing with all that, all the manpower, the salaries, the equipment, maintenance, but also the retirement. A lot of TTC people, when they retire, this is all City of Toronto is paying for it. And I don't know. It's a fucking mess.
It's going to come more and more. If you add just walk this out 5 years, right? Let's say they put in a 5% tax or whatever it is, foreign change, I think they're proposing in their literature. People will either leave the city to shop, which would cause more problems for the city's coffers. They'll move out of the city if they can, which cause problems for the city's coffers. Or lend, they'll demand pay increases, which is inflationary. And we've seen that here. The Ontario teachers are about to go through a semi-pseudo strike threat, whatever they're doing now over there, to give you an example of what that looks like. The city, this is a primo example of a city who has let stupid policies implemented by stupid people for the benefit of stupid voters get away from them over the last 30 years. John Tory, all of a sudden, a guy named No Story Tory decides that there's a story coming out that he had a sexual relationship with a woman he worked with. And although the paper's calling it infidelity, it seems to me like in circles near Tory, him and his wife have been separated for some time anyways. And so it's not really even infidelity. Are you telling me this guy just didn't want out? Looking at the budget picture and the fiscal picture of that city, I wouldn't be surprised if that guy just wanted to take his take his ball and go home. The city is not willing to look at any wasteful spending. They don't want to. The TTC is a great example. Like you mentioned, you know, how much are they pouring into that, that service? It's not safe. It's not clean. It's not reliable. The subway tunnels, I don't know if when the last time you took the subway was, but the subway tunnels are disgusting. They're full of homeless people, people with mental health issues, and the city's got that plague as well, much like many major Canadian cities, even semi-majors like Hamilton or Oakville or whatever, you know. See this all over the place. It's funny, I had some family here from Calgary over the weekend, and my cousin's 28. He runs a landscaping business. And we were talking about the taxes and stuff that he pays and how much housing is and all these different things. And he's going, you guys have done everything wrong. Like in Calgary, we don't have any of this stuff. There's no problems with tent cities. The housing is affordable. It's all driven by oil and gas. Everyone over there knows that there's policy options available that work for not only Calgary and Alberta, but for the entire country. You know, I think we talked once before about how oil and gas money pays for something like 30% of the Quebec pension, for example. Why can't we really lean into natural resource production and use that money to help cities and provinces that are suffering? I don't know. I keep on hearing Olivia Chow cite that, oh, Toronto is 10% of Canada's GDP. That's bullshit. It's all financialization. Toronto doesn't produce anything. They don't produce anything. It's derivatives trading and other nonsense from Bay Street, right? Like, it's garbage. This idea that Ontario is, you know, one third of the GDP of the country. Like, doing what? It's all paper wealth. None of it does anything. There's no productivity. White collar jobs are not the thing you need to really drive growth and to gain support for programs that are, you know, running lean or running at a deficit. And I don't think that Toronto understands that this is a dumb idea. But like we always say, Len, how many people will vote for this because they think it's, you know, a policy that'll help transfer wealth from the, you know, rich to the poor through some government program or whatever? I don't know. My guess is that number is pretty high. It's pretty, pretty stupid down there in Toronto. Communist Toronto, getting dumber by the day.
Did you see that the CPI for Canada came in for the month of July and it was hot, up,
right?
Yeah. So 3.3 was the number being reported. And this is higher than the 2.8 that was reported back in August, sorry, in June. So from June from 2 to July, 3.3. And so with looking at this, they're going to be meeting again, I think, next month and making a decision talking about the Bank of Canada. Is this going to impact their decision with rate hikes? I mean, I don't know, but maybe it will. And if it does, more pain for a lot more people moving forward. I don't know. Remember when we had a 2.8% that was reported back in June? A lot of people out there in power that were taking credit for getting it Freeland. That low. But you know what?
Yeah.
They're very
quiet. Had a tweet pinned. Freeland had a tweet pinned about 2.8. We're back in the bank scope. Go check and see what's pinned now. It ain't that.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's her. I'm just saying other
to
people.
To quote my buddy, who I don't know, but he is my buddy, Keith Dicker from Looney Hour. This is why you don't celebrate on one data point when the trend is clearly still moving against you. And again, you have to ask, we haven't used the term lowest common denominator communication theory on this show in a long time, but you got to ask, who are those tweets for? Not for people paying attention, for people who are not paying attention, people who vote for, you know, certain political parties, I would argue. And you're seeing that, right? Disaster, man, for the country. As far as like, will the bank raise? I don't know. Probably, if I had to guess, they probably will, because energy prices are going up, and like these guys are. We've talked about this before. The reason, and believe me, I've been dunked on enough times because, you know, over the last 2 years, we said so many times they can't raise rates significantly. It doesn't make sense. It's not feasible. The reason that we thought they couldn't raise rates is because they're in this exact situation now. The raising the rates is inflationary. Inflation demands rate hikes, and you just wind up in a circle. Not only that, but when the U.S. eventually stops cooking the price of oil with SPR releases, what do you think is going to happen to the price of energy? Like, these people who are talking about windmills and you know, water turbines, or what God knows whatever else, solar panels, like, this stuff doesn't work, man. Okay, you can go to the Texas ERCOT website, I'm pretty sure, and see the renewables mix at any one time. There's multiple times per day, multiple times per week when the renewables contribution is zero. And if you don't have oil and gas, you're going to get oil and gas demand going up because people need it, regardless of what you think about it or what you, you know, what you want to ban or what you think they should be using or what you know, COP24 party you go to talk about removing these things from the energy mix. People need them. And it's inflationary when people need them and you don't have them. And so now they're in this spiral too, right? I don't envy Tiff at all. I don't think he's done a good job, but I also don't envy him. He's in a very difficult position. It's getting more difficult and it's made even more challenging by policies implemented by politicians at every level, right? Giving money away and all these different things. It's not good. It's not a good situation for us. And more people are talking about this online, by the way, Americans and Europeans talking about how fucked we are over here. We're lucky, you know, you and I think are on pretty good fiscal monetary footing, but there's a lot of people who aren't. There's a lot of people who aren't, exactly. And I really feel for those people because they're just getting their teeth kicked in by every single word out of every single mouth that matters in the last year and a half.
Yeah. And when to go back to Tift, I think that a lot of people are upset with the job he's doing is because of the words that came out of his mouth about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, saying that rates are low and will remain low for a long time. So when this comes from the governor of the Bank of Canada, where the guy that is pulling the strings in the monetary policy, you kind of expect these words to be true. And people reacted as a result from that. So people borrowed, people did whatever they had to do based on that. And now a year and a half later, 2 years later, they're getting the shaft. And some people are going to lose their house or assets or whatever. And so that's why people are upset, is that he said something. And in terms of his actions or the Bank of Canada's actions, it's totally against what he said. And that's why a lot of people are upset.
Yeah,
and I can understand that.
You're 100% right. You're 100% right. And the other thing I would just note is that like bond yields are absolutely blowing out here, the United States. And like people are saying like, oh, look, you should be in bonds instead of in real estate. Like many been rinsed or whatever on Twitter, who I actually think is a good account to follow if you're one of these guys who's kind of laughing at the real estate bulls, you know, the 20 rental guys who are just leveraged to the tits. You know, you could park your money in bonds for 5% if you want, but at the end of the day, like it's not the bonds or the real estate or whatever. Everyone is doing the same thing. They're playing defense against currency debasement. Some people can articulate it, others cannot, but everybody knows that the money is losing value if it sits in your pocket or your bank account. And so my argument for those people would just be like, hey, you're being paid in something that's clearly being devalued. I think, I want to say Blair, On Air Blair, tweeted this out today, who I met at the conference, very nice guy, who actually hosts a radio show in London, believe it or not. Small world, right? Everyone's got these jobs you kind of only hear about. But anyway, tweeted out today that the Canadian government since 2000 has debased you by about 37%. If you look at the bank's own inflation calculator on their website. So like, is this the currency you want to be in? You're telling me you want to lock into a 5-year bond at 5% when over 20 years they got you for 38 on their numbers? You're losing money. Like the answer is to be in Bitcoin. That's the answer. It's not to be in bonds. It's not to be in, you know, what do they call these dividend stocks? Like, guys,
I'm in mutual funds. Failing. Fuck this. I'm going all in mutual funds.
Mutual funds are the best. The bank branded shitty ETF. That's the funniest thing. So like I just think like, why would you be in these things? You see what's happening, man. The money is falling out of the sky everywhere. And you know, fourth turning and all these, there's a hot war in Europe, all these different things tell you that there's a serious shift coming. And so if you're not in Bitcoin, I just think like, why? What's stopping you from 5% or 10% or 50% or whatever? Not financial
advice. It's not a serious shift. Like, come on. Serious shit is coming.
It's both. Yeah. And like, I don't understand why people are celebrating, oh, real estate's taking a dive. Like, guys.
Oh no, and this is really bad. I mean, in a number of different respects, and I'll explain why. Because we have now the last year it was reported 1 million people came to Canada, and it's going to be around 1 million ish this year, a little bit more than 1 million. So you're getting more and more people coming to Canada, and obviously we have right now soaring rent costs. This is not a result, wholly a result of the people coming here. The failing money is really a primary reason, but adding a bunch more people into Canada does contribute to this factor as well. There's some stories out there. I've seen it. Some guy was trying to rent his boiler room. He did it for a joke, and people reply to that. He ended up pulling it off. He just wanted to do this to see for a joke, to see if anyone would reply to it. But people are so fucking desperate that they'll rent a space beside a water heater and a furnace, yeah, and they'll live there at a decent price. Even one dude was trying to rent a place in his bed, a shared bed. So you'd rent a bed next to a stranger as a way to like make ends meet. And there's the list of this goes on and on. But there was a new report by the Canadian Home Builders Association, the CHBA. They say that 22% of Canadian home builders canceled projects. This is because of high rates. And even though there's a severe housing shortage, they still, 22% cancel the projects. The CHB estimates that Canada needs 5.8 million new homes over the next 10 years to meet housing demands. These numbers may be inflated given who the CHBA is representing. I'll give it that. But it's clear we need more and more units. There's a shortage of homes right now, and we need to build tons more. Whatever that number tons is, I don't know, but still we need tons. But this is where things are getting bad. According to Stats Canada, they say the latest labor force survey, the construction industry that's responsible for building these homes lost 45,000 jobs in July. Sure. And this isn't a one-off. They reported a loss of 14,000 jobs in June. So it's trending in the wrong direction, and it's actually accelerating, in fact. And since 2023, the beginning of this year, January 2023, employment in construction decreased 71,000 jobs. So this is going to have a direct result of building homes, because you're going to have less people doing it. It's going to increase the amount of time to do it, but also the rising cost of materials, the carrying cost of carrying debt is taking its toll. These home builders, they can't do it. And plus you throw in the fact that there's a lesser demand for new homes because interest rates are going high. Who the heck wants to buy a new home when you're going to be putting up interest around 7-8%, or sorry, 5-6%, maybe 7%. It's a recipe for disaster. And like I said, you have the million people coming to Canada. The question remains is, where do they live? I don't know. I mean, we've had stories in the past of international students coming here and living under bridges. That's what is being reported. One, it's sad when fucking somebody comes here from overseas to come here to study and they find a dude living under a fucking bridge.
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking sad. Like, then, another story that you talked about in the past, I don't know if it was on this show or you could probably talk a little bit more about forcing people to rent their rooms, their empty rooms in their homes.
Yeah.
So if you have a house that has an empty room there. So there's no quick fix to all this. It's only going to be a lot of pain. And here we are. And I don't know. It's a fucking disaster.
We've never built enough houses, by the way, to match the Canadian population. We've always had a bit of a crunch for the last 20 years. It's getting worse now. And like you said, I mean, I'm not an economist. You're not an economist. Neither of us are mathematicians or anything of that nature. But even I know that if you make housing unaffordable through high rates, builders won't build because they can't sell. How hard is that to figure out? Like, that's a two-part equation. Rates are high, people can't buy them, so I'm not going to build them. How hard is that to figure out? And so there's people now clamoring. If you go on the Canadian real estate, Canada Housing or Canada Real Estate subreddit, I forget, but there's people there that are like completely insane talking about how we need to tax boomers out of their homes. Otherwise they're never going to sell them. They've already had their fair share. They've already retired. They don't need a house that size. We want to start families, blah, blah, blah. It's completely nuts, man. The stuff these people are saying. And Len, again, not to beat a dead horse, they vote in numbers, and the number of people are growing. I sent to one of the group chats that I'm in this post I saw on Nextdoor, this Ukrainian girl, 24-year-old Ukrainian girl looking for a place to live. She just came over and I guess she kind of wore out her welcome with their billet family. And now she needs a place to live, starting in September. And she's like, I'll literally like cook, I'll clean, I'll do whatever. Like, I just need a place to stay. And I don't know if she got any bites. I should ask her to come on the show. Like, what was the experience like here? What were you promised and what did you get? It's not quite the land of milk and honey you were told, I'm sure. Question is, how misleading was it? And, I fear that gap is going to be pretty easy for newcomers to bridge, right? Ritesh Jain, friend of the show, talks about this on his Twitter feed all the time, that when he talks to Indians thinking about coming over, he warns them, like, it ain't all it's cracked up to be over here, guys. It's the most expensive place in the world. The services are subpar. The people are generally, you know, poor. Everyone wants to move to the same three cities. And so if you want to move there too, you're going to pay for it. Both in terms of quality of life and in terms of your monthly outflows. It's brutal. It's all stupid. Like, I don't understand why is this so hard to figure out? We gotta like for a year, remove the building taxes, remove them for a year, you know, whatever. Taylor had some good ideas last week, actually, on ways to make housing more affordable, like run two floating rates, right? One for primary residences and one for secondary or rentals or tertiary investment properties, whatever, or and extend amortizations, which is a, you know, an invitation for a lifetime of slavery, but at least you can put a roof over your head. You're not living under a bridge. You know, there's stuff you can do or stuff the government can do. Question is, will they do it? Number one. And also the question is, what are the externalities? What are the second order effects? They don't seem to know. And I don't know right off the hop either, but my guess, Len, anytime you interfere with a free market, you're going to get problems down the road. The question is, how severe are they going to be? And what are you going to have to do to kick those ones further down the road when the time comes?
You know, for builders and maybe reducing or maybe waiving fees, I'm not sure how much that could fly. And I'm going to be very broad in this approach. My argument here is when you have builders building a new building or subdivision, even the municipality gets some kickback. And maybe that's the wrong word to use, but there's a bill to be paid to the city or township or whatever. And that is used to then increase the services to the new subdivision or new building, water hookup, roads, and so forth. So if you take that out of the equation, if they're not going to collect any money for doing that, then the existing homeowners in that municipality is going to have to foot the bill. And I can see them being upset about that. So there's really no quick fix to it. Somebody's going to take it up the ass one way or another. And there's no, like, as I mentioned, there's no quick fix. This is something that's going to be with us for a long time. It's going to take years, if not decades, to resolve this problem. And people are not going to be leaving en masse. They'll continue to come here en masse. And that's going to continually add to the problem. But, you know, there's some good news from all this, because at least CTV is giving some advice on people to go get their nutrition from the dollar store. So rather than going to the grocery store, or whatever grocery store you tend to go to, they're showing you in ways in which you can meet your nutritional daily requirements by going to a dollar store and getting food from there. That's how far down we've gone.
How bonkers is that? I am shocked.
That's insane. And it's going to show you that how bad things are, that people don't have the money required to make ends meet going to their traditional stores, a grocery store, to buy their fucking food. And they're trying to show you, here's ways you could skirt that and still meet your daily requirement, but save a little bit of money. But by going to fucking, who the heck? Maybe that's the wrong one. I can't see them sending a whole bunch of people to the dollar store to do grocery shopping for a lot of their food needs. Maybe a few things, but you know what I mean? Like, what's the next step after this? Which food bank is the least, right? Like, it has the most capacity. It's a sliding scale here, and it gets worse and worse every time they come up with a new idea. It's just, it's fucked up.
Think about, too, in the CTV article, you know who they quote for that information, how to get your nutrition from dollar stores? A long-term care worker, long-term care manager. So next time you go visit grandma and grandpa in the long-term care home, remember that they're getting their meals from the dollar store, all their protein coming from the dollar store. Room temperature, stored for weeks at a time. It's just so embarrassing. See, like, people wonder, maybe not a lot of people, but some people probably, CTV probably wonders, you know, why they're not getting more support in this Meta blocking their links thing. Because you guys just post fucking nonsense. Like, that's a garbage story. Who cares? Why would you ever put that up? Like, this got to be a filter for this. Someone somewhere has to look at this and say, that's a bad idea. Because you got to ask yourself, Len, if that's the thing that makes it through all the controls and the editorial board, what doesn't make it through that those same people are pitching? Can you imagine what's on the cutting room floor? Can you imagine?
That'd be incredible. That's insane. That could be a Netflix series on its own. And maybe that's a good way to subsidize.
For information. Come on. How can this be possible? What are we talking about?
I don't know. It's sad, but it gets even worse, because I'm not sure if you saw that Niagara Falls, the city of Niagara Falls in Canada, they passed a motion, their council did, to support basic income, universal basic income over here. So it's not the first municipality that did this. There's a number of them in Canada. Hamilton, I think, was one of them as well, that it wants to explore this. So they do like the idea, and more municipalities seem to be on board with this notion. And oh man, it's hard to put it into words, but CBDCs, I know it's a different topic, but it works well in this environment, and the control you could have. I'm just thinking this is going the wrong direction. Every time you hear stuff like this, there's less incentive to produce and the ability just to stay home and collect. And it just further devalue the dollar. The people that are working, that are paying, that are contributing, they'll have to work even more and contribute even more just to make ends meet, because the dollar is going to be devalued and people that are going to be receiving will need more in order to sustain themselves. And you get this vicious cycle and it never ends. And eventually the whole thing collapses. But I don't like this at all. And I tried in the past and I stopped bringing somebody, a pro UBI advocate, on the show, and nobody wants to come on. Unfortunately, I give them the floor, and I would love to hear what is the short, medium, and long-term outlook for this? Like, how sustainable is it in the medium and long-term? Short-term, fine, I can see that. But there's more than just a short-term outlook. And I want to hear, without laughing, I want to just have an honest discussion about this, because I want to hear about it. I want to hear a different point of view, because I can't wrap my head around it. So maybe somebody can give me some ideas to make me see it their way. Maybe not, but I want to have an open mind.
Yes, someone to steel man it for you. I mean, ultimately, why are these cities even having these like discussions about UBI? The city can't do UBI. So why are you wasting taxpayer money? This is another thing that boggles my mind. People pay their taxes and you guys are doing stupid pet projects that you can't even fucking carry out. Why are you wasting everyone's time and money like this? Fire all these people. Like, this should be immediately terminate every single one of these people who is involved in this. It's a huge waste of time. There's no way for you to execute on anything you've discussed related to UBI. You don't have the money printer. You don't get to control monetary policy, nor do you get to decide whether or not you're going to give people Canadian currency just for fucking sitting around. You don't get to decide any of that stuff. Find another way to spend your time that actually is valuable. Figure something else out. Get some builders in. Bring some people in to help, you know, the thirst that everyone has for fucking housing. Anything.
You can't. 22% decided to fuck up.
It's insane. It's insane. Like, why are these people wasting their time? I don't understand this. This drives me insane.
Okay, this is going to go into the weeds here. If you look at, I think this is a Canada Act. It could be wrong. But if you look at historical documents of Canada and how the Dominion was formed and everything, there are only two levels of government. The municipal government doesn't even exist in reality. It's section 92 and 94 of, I think, the Canada Act.
This is what I mean. Like, what are we doing here, man?
And each of those two sections, they define what roles and responsibilities fall under both the federal government and provincial government. There is no reference whatsoever of municipal governments. What the municipal governments was the provincial governments not wanting to deal with the nitty gritty of the day to day shit that comes along with, and that's how this all spun up. Reality, that they don't exist. They just is fabricated in terms of the laws and everything the way it was drawn up. So that's just I'm going into the weeds here. Anyways, that's it, Joe. I'm not sure if you have a Bitcoiner or no coiner that you want to bring up.
I got nobody. I barely even listened to any Bitcoin podcasts over the last week because I've been moving my house and everything. But
do you feel cleansed by doing that or no? Or do you miss?
I got rid of a lot of stuff. Do I feel cleansed by not listening to any media for a little while?
Yeah.
Yeah, big time for sure.
Yeah, you know what? And I'll be honest, I've reduced my intake for podcasts. And I only listen to really one or two now. I listen to Your Life, Your Terms. Yeah. And then I also listen to Patrick Bet David. That's the only two I listen to now.
You're right. I would prefer to read now, I think, a little more, taking your advice. And also, I just think that, like, I find that the time I'm listening to podcasts, I get too spun up. I get too spun up. Like, I can feel like, I'm getting mad. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, why? What am I, you know, like, who cares?
Wow. And you know what? This is good after.
Yeah. We'll get into it. That's it for today. Come back tomorrow for Pat Mayo talking fantasy football tomorrow, which will be nice. I won't get worked up over that unless he decides that he has to go running back in round one and two, but I doubt it. Probably receiver.
Go Phoenix Cardinals. They're my team.
That's right. Okay. After show coming up next. Take care of yourself till then.
Take care, PV, and don't be a cock.